It's all about copyright on the show today, so stay tuned as we answer many of the questions you might have, and those that we don't have answers for, we have resources for you. All coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. In fact, this is episode 237 for Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012. This is a show where we talk about technology, but not just any technology, technology that has relevance for the church and our respective ministries. And to help me do that, as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And how are you on this lovely spring morning?
Beautiful, beautiful. So yeah. Episode 237. Did you ever think maybe 5 or 6 years ago that you'd be doing a podcast every week and being a an internet radio star?
A star. That's what I am, in my own mind, at least.
In my mind, at least.
Can't say I did consider that we'd have 237 weekly podcasts under our belt. But
it's been fun. And
that's right.
I hope
learned
we
a lot in the process.
Keep it going. Yeah, I think we get as much out of it, hopefully, as our listeners do, because we do a lot of research, and this is one of those shows where we're in uncharted territory, and we should probably have a disclaimer right at the top. We're going to talk about copyright, but neither Sally or I are copyright experts, lawyers, or anybody that spends a lot of time in this space.
Nor do we play
them on television either. But we've found some great resources that we'd like to share, and that's kind of what we do on this show, Sally. We don't produce a lot of our own original content, but we know where to look. And I think we found some good stuff for you. So maybe we should jump right into our discussion of copyright. Maybe some rationale as to why we're talking copyright. And I don't know about you, Sally, but I probably field one or two copyright questions, you know, at least once or twice a week. And the reason for that is it's a complicated topic.
It is a complicated topic and one that we'd like to kind of ignore, mm-hmm. but one that can get us in trouble if we do ignore it.
And
so
I think
we want to be on
many,
the up and up.
I think there are many churches and schools who do ignore it, unfortunately, and some say ignorance is bliss. And the chances of you kind of getting called on the carpet are slim, but really, it's not the government we're worried about. It's our God, and He has told us, you know, we should obey the prevailing laws, and one of those prevailing laws is copyright, and regardless of how complicated it is, it's something we need to pay attention to. So if you are in that boat of producing digital reproductions of worship services and the like, you need to be aware of what you can do and what you can't do. So, Sally, where are we going to look for these great resources?
Well, our friends at Christian Copyright Solution have put together some really amazing resources directed at exactly the questions congregations are struggling with. So we're going to point our listeners to a page on their website. It's called their Fact Sheets page, and we'll definitely have a link in the show notes, and it's also linked to from our Wells Tech Wiki copyright page as well. So, mm-hmm. Lots of fact sheets here. They're really well done. They've got Copyrights 101, Church Blanket Licenses, Creating Legal CDs and DVDs, Copyright Issues for Webcasting Religious Services, and Top 5 Myths of Performance Rights, mm-hmm. among others. So we just thought we'd take a walk through some of those resources
sure.
to start with.
Maybe let's talk about things that where you don't have to worry about copyright. And I know a lot of our listeners and their congregations do either live streaming or record their services. Now, the entire service, that's a copyright issue, but there are pieces of the service that many congregations do stream or do record that don't fall under copyright law, and that mainly is the sermon. The sermon is not necessarily a copyrighted piece unless the pastor or the church copyrights it themselves. So really no worries there. So you can record every sermon. You can distribute those in any format that you want, whether it be on a DVD or online, whether it's on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever. And you can live stream till the cows come home. You don't have copyright concerns there.
Right. I guess the proper way to say it would be that the pastor does have the copyright, but obviously he would be allowing that usage. So if you had a guest pastor, you'd want to make sure that it was okay with them that you did that same kind of streaming and everything
and
of their
resources. I can't imagine that there would be an issue with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
At least not in our circles. So that's the good news. And I think in general, my advice to a lot of congregations, if they are archiving content and not necessarily live streaming, is the sermon is good enough. That is really what probably most people are tuning in to view, especially visitors. I find it unlikely that somebody's going to sit through an hour plus service, with the offering and communion and whatever, and want to view that in an archive fashion. The sermon is probably sufficient. But many congregations now, like your own congregation, Sally, are live streaming the entire service, and that brings up some issues.
Right, exactly. There are different components of the service that do have copyright on them. They're owned by someone, and you need to have permission to share them. Mm-hmm. And primarily, we're talking the hymns and the liturgy that you use. Mm-hmm. And there are licenses available that would allow you to stream those things, but you can't just assume that it's okay to stream those things. As a matter of fact, one of these fact sheets states it very plainly. It says U.S. copyright law provides a religious service exemption, which allows performance and display of certain copyrighted works in a religious service without permission or royalty payments. This exemption does not extend to webcasting. Mm-hmm. When it comes to webcasting, churches and ministries have no special rights over companies or private individuals.
Right. So, most people are familiar with kind of the two big blanket licensing agencies. One is onelicense.net and the other is CCLI. And I believe CCLI is the content we're looking at or recommending that you look at these fact sheets. And congregations have been using these services for a long time to cover the reproduction of copyrighted material. So if you're putting, hymn in the bulletin, the choir music, whatever, those kinds of things are covered within the context of a worship service for reproduction. Performance, and now online performance in a streaming fashion, is covered in another what they call modules or plugins or licenses that you have to purchase from those same agencies that would cover the same content. Now, there could be some things within your worship service that aren't covered by CCLI or onelicense.net, so you want to make sure you check that. But they've really made it easy, Sally, I think, to grab these licenses and feel that you're covered for the most part with the things that you're streaming online.
Exactly. The CCLI podcast license allows you to stream. It allows you to do whatever with mm-hmm. that catalog of songs. And they have about 200,000 songs yep. that are covered by their license. One license counts their publishers. They have 62 publishers mm-hmm. That are included in their licensing. So between the two, you should be able to podcast and also record for the homebound.
Now, there are a couple considerations there. You do have to report, just like you do on the regular reproduction license. So you have to report. But what do you report? That's where you have to actually, in some cases, and you want to read the fine print in both of these licenses because they work a little bit differently. You have to report views or downloads. So you have to be using technology that allows that kind of logging so you can report that. And most of the tools out there give you that ability. I know Vimeo and YouTube obviously do. Even the Final Web products, you know, do that as well.
I just, again, mentioned the fact sheet called Church Blanket Licenses. It goes into each of those companies as well as several others. There's one called Worship Cast that does the same thing.
Right.
And again, you may just need one of these until one of your songs falls outside of the catalog of songs that they cover. And so that's why you need to be really careful about what's covered by the particular license offered by the different companies.
Right. So you may want to check what licenses you have. I think a lot of churches are under the impression that because they have the base, you know, onelicense.net or CCLI license, that that covers any use of it, whether it be streaming or not. But as you clearly read, Sally, it doesn't. You need a special license for that. And I haven't checked recently, but the last time I did check, the license, at least on onelicense.net, is about 50% of the cost of the main license. So to add on the podcasting license, you're going to up, you know, you're going to up your licensing fee, what you pay one license, by 50%. CCLI, I guess, would be probably in that same category. So there is additional cost to be able to do this. So you kind of have to weigh, you know, is it worth it to do it or not? And then you have to make some choices, too, about how you're going to do it, how often you're going to do it, and what you're going to do with it.
One other thing that you may find in the fine print, and I think it'll vary vendor to vendor, but the length of time that you can keep archived versions out there. So again, if you're archiving just the sermon part, if that's what's available on your website for on-demand download in the future, then you're fine. But if you're archiving the entire service, then I think you're going to have to maybe keep your archive kind of cleaned up, not keep it out there for the next 10 years, but maybe only for 6 months to a year or something like that.
Exactly.
So read the contracts.
Right. And it's not all about worship either. There are other things that you can stream or archive. I know, Sally, in your church, you stream the Bible study.
Right. And of course, that's homemade content that's done by the pastor or the Bible study leader.
It
typically
can be homemade, but there are other copyrighted materials that could also be used there, too.
Right. And I think one of the fact sheets deals with different types of copyright materials. For instance, imagery. Mm-hmm. If you display imagery or show a video that then gets streamed or archived as part of the recording, that's going to be under copyright as well.
Right. So before we leave the whole conversation of copyright, there's probably a couple other resources we want to point people to. We've kept over the years a wiki page on our WellsTech wiki site for copyright-related conversations materials, so you may want to visit there as well. And we have links to the resources on CCLI and other places. We have talked about copyright way back in 08 with a lawyer, an actual lawyer. Wells lawyer Harvey Dunn, former SC member as well. And that's back in episodes 4 and 5. And I think we've talked about copyright off and on in different other episodes, maybe just not the topic of it. And one new resource is something that we're putting together based on questions that we frequently get either at MPH or here at the Synod office through Communication Services. They're a copyright FAQ, so frequently asked questions on copyright that relate to specifically Wells material. So you may want to check that out. We'll put a link to that. That's on the Synod's intranet site called Connect. And that offers about, you know, 15, 20 commonly asked questions that may be questions that you have in your mind. So you may want to check that out.
You know, it's really great. We have a Communication Services office that is looking out for us in that regard. And I heard recently that there was a new employee in Communication Services.
Well, what a segue, Sal.
What a segue.
Do you think we could get him on the show for an interview?
It would be great if we could.
Well, lo and behold, that's exactly what we did. Lee Hitter, just joined the staff here at the Senate Administration Building in the new position of Director of Communications Services, which had been vacant for a number of months, and we're very happy to have Lee. And we had the chance to sit down with him and ask him a few questions about what exactly it is that he does. So let's listen to our interview with Lee Hitter. Joining us today on the podcast, we are happy to have Lee Hitter, Director of Communications for Wells. Good morning, Lee. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you. I'm doing great.
Glad you could join us. And we're kind of putting you on the spot because you've only been on the job, what, 6 weeks now or something like that?
6 to 7 weeks, yes.
And so we're asking more for first impressions than the entire master plan for the communications strategy for
absolutely,
the Senate.
Absolutely.
But, we thought our listeners would like to get to know you a little bit. And communications is so tied up in technology nowadays that we felt it would be good to talk with you a little bit. So maybe before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, background, you know, family, church activity, just kind of the abridged Reader's Digest version of Lee Hitter.
Sure. Well, I've been married for almost 30 years to my wife, Christy, and we have three children, ages 20, 23, and 26. We've been members of Mount Olive in Appleton for over 20 years. And my kids attended both the grade school there and Fox Valley Lutheran High School. I've had several leadership positions within the congregation, former president. I'm currently the chairman of the Board of Member Ministry, which is our elders board.
Okay.
Professionally speaking, I've spent the last 30 years working in broadcast television news. The past 17 is news director for the CBS affiliate up in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay.
We produce 4 hours of news per day, and of course the station website and our mobile apps to communicate with our viewers 24/7 was really important.
Right, right. So are you still living up there and commuting?
I am. Okay. I plan to do
How's
that.
How's that going?
It's going fine. There are quite a few hundred people making that commute every day from Appleton to Milwaukee and back.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So Appleton's a bedroom community
That's
for Milwaukee.
Right. That's right.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing to me. But I love that that area, and Appleton really seems to be growing.
It is. It's a wonderful community to raise a family. We are looking forward, now that we are empty nesters, to moving to Milwaukee eventually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
So, Lee, we're curious about what it is exactly that pulled you away from the exciting television news world to be the director of communications. What was appealing about this position?
Well, having spent my entire career in a television newsroom, I was really ready to do something more worthwhile and meaningful with the rest of my working years. So when I became aware that the Director of Communication Services position was available, I first spoke to my pastors about it and then prayed. And then once I came up and interviewed with President Schrader and the members of his President's Advisory Council, I really realized that my professional background would be an excellent opportunity for me to serve my Lord and the Synod in this job. You know, the people that I've met here in this building and the people that are working in the areas of ministry are so passionate about their service to the Lord and to the Synod, and this team attitude and positive atmosphere that's here, it's really validated my decision to switch careers.
How much did you know about the Synod before you interviewed for the job and, you know, began to, you know, to work here?
Well, I was aware that the Synod existed,
of course.
You know, and you know, we show the Wells connection in our church every month. So that was really my link.
Okay.
Once I became aware of the position and jumped onto the Wells.net website and just found all this terrific content about what we believe as Wells Lutherans, the daily devotion through my Bible in 3 years, the Wells Locator area, which is on the website. It just really opened up my eyes and I now have a full appreciation for what the Synod does in the different areas of ministry that I didn't have before.
Good.
So I see that as the main focus of my job, is to get that information to the person in the pew and to really promote and market the fact that we have this terrific resource as a communications platform.
Yep. Well, we were all very impressed with the amount of research that you did coming into the interview process that You probably knew as much or more than any new employee coming into to the role or any role here about what the Synod is and does just by, you know, just by looking at the resources that were available, which I guess speaks well to our communications approach that we're at least putting that out there. So not that there isn't room for improvement. So
absolutely.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are probably wondering what you do. You know, so what does the director of communications for an international church body like Wells do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, myself and the communications team, I have a small staff. Our primary goal is to, you know, get the information to the members of the Synod through all the different various platforms. I mentioned Wells Connection video that we're producing each month that's currently being played in over 900 congregations within the Synod. We produce the Together News or the Together e-newsletter, which is written. It's subscription-based, but it's also available on wells.net. We're updating that every first and third Tuesday of the month. We also create a PDF file of that document so they can, the congregations can download and print that and put it as a bulletin insert, and sure, we certainly encourage them to do that. We also work with Northwestern Publishing House to produce Forward in Christ magazine, the monthly publication, filled with these inspirational and educational articles, as well as devotions, Bible studies, and it does include Synod news. So our staff works on that as well. Mm-hmm. We're also preparing for the upcoming district conventions. The report to the 12 districts was just distributed.
Right.
And with the Synod convention next year, we're already working on that in the book of reports and memorials, and the Synod annual report is part of our duties as well. So, mm-hmm, you know, there's a lot going on with the wells.net homepage and all the areas of ministry. It's a tab near the bottom of the page. We work to keep those areas updated,
sure,
and let the people know what's going on and all the excellent work that happens here.
Yeah. Any eye-opening experiences in the first 6 weeks? Any surprises for you?
Not really surprises. I just think some fantastic opportunities. You know, we have the call and assignment days going on this week.
Yep.
And, you know, what a great opportunity to showcase the Synod.
That's awesome.
And,
yeah,
you know, the confession of faith that these young individuals have. So I asked President Schrader and Pastor Paul Prangy to write articles about it to get that on our homepage. We're streaming 8 live events throughout the week, from concerts to the graduation ceremonies, mm-hmm, to the call services themselves. So an excellent opportunity to showcase this area of ministry, and was just excited that the ideas that I have weren't, they worked out great.
Okay.
And the technology department was enthusiastic about the changes to the homepage for this week, and we're looking to do more of that type of thing as these events come up.
Good.
Very good. You've mentioned a lot of the great resources already that are available on Wells.net. What about changes to Wells.net? Do you have any ideas or planned changes coming down the pipe?
Well, again, I don't know if they're wholesale changes because it is such an excellent resource. I guess the big thing is we need to promote it more, and we also need to understand that people are viewing it not only on their desktop or laptop, but, you know, they're using tablets and smartphones and things like that. So mm-hmm, as we develop apps, there is a Wells app. I encourage, if you have one of those devices, to download it. You know, your daily devotions are there through the Bible. This Wells podcast, mm-hmm, Wells Tech podcast is there, and all the different resources that we have. So, you know, as I look at that, I also want to partner with the churches and schools within the Synod to share content back and forth, to get fresh content on our website. So if the church or school has a website, I encourage you to put the Wells logo on your homepage to link to us, to be that resource for the person within the congregation. They really have the connection with the congregation first and the Synod second, and mm-hmm, I understand that. So, you know, my goal is to get fresh content each and every day on our site to keep the people informed as to what's going on.
Great. So One question that usually begs to be asked whenever we talk about communications is social networks. The Synod, a while back, had started a Facebook page, and we have a Twitter account, but I would say that's in its beginning stages. What about Wells' use of social networks? Have you had time to think about that and, you know, strategize around maybe how we as a Synod can better use it, or maybe some of our congregations as well?
Well, it's an important platform. We need to be there. We need to be active on our pages to put that good content out there. We're looking for that interaction with the members of the Synod. Both the Facebook page and the Twitter page, I'd encourage you to like the Facebook page and to follow us on Twitter. You know, I'm looking at the upcoming events and opportunities, and the youth rally in my mind is just, I just think, an excellent opportunity. We're going to have 2,000 right. young participants there all mm-hmm. week, last week of June. I want the Wells.net homepage and our Facebook and Twitter pages to really be the source of information and stories that are happening at the rally. So as the young kids are down there, what a great way for parents, family, friends of the participants to keep up to date on the events of the rally, and to have these young people share their experiences and photos from the rally, make it that interactive media
great.
Platform.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my goal with this upcoming rally. It's an event just made for Facebook and Twitter, and
sure.
and I think I'll use that as the model going forward mm-hmm. Once we have that established.
Right.
Very good. And you mentioned wanting to partner with the individual congregations. Are there other ways that you can think of that you can be of an assistance to individual congregations?
Well, we're communication services, and obviously if people do have a question about what we're doing or what we can provide, I would ask them to go to our Connect homepage, Communication Services. There's a Contact Us form on there. It's a request form. We really want to know if your church or school is featured in a local news story,
right.
so we can get that on our Wells in the News section on Wells.net and Connect. I also want people to be aware that if their church is participating in a community event, festival, that type of thing, we have these plastic biodegradable banners mm-hmm. With the Wells logo on it, and we'd love you to proudly display this at the
great.
Event. And they're free of charge. You just request it through our Connect page on Communication Services, and we'll send you a 10 to 15 foot section of this plastic banner that you can cut into smaller sections. And we use it as table skirting at conventions and things like that, just to proudly display the Wells logo and Wells.net. But really, Communication Services, we're all about services. We really want to hear from the congregations and schools if they have a particular idea that they'd like to share with us, that then we can share with the rest of the Synod.
Great. Sounds like you are off to a roaring start, and we look mm-hmm. forward to following the progress of the department. It's such important work, and really appreciate you taking the time this morning, Lee, to share with our listeners what you're doing, and God's blessings on your continued work in His name.
Thank you very much.
Sally, Lee has a big job ahead of him, but it sounds like he's excited about it and has some good plans for it.
It does. He gave me a big job. I have a lot of links to add to our show notes today. So so check out the wellstech.wells.net website for links to all that great content that Lee talked about.
Yep. And he is a resource for our listeners as well. So if you have questions on communications and even copyright, Lee would be a good resource for that. So please take advantage of Lee, and I'm sure he would be more than willing to help. And thank you, Lee, for taking time to join us on the podcast. Really enjoyed our chat. Shall we move on, Sally?
Sure. It's time to talk about Google. Is that the
Google
name of
segment.
Our
yes.
yeah of one of our segments of our show?
Yeah.
No, this is the news and tech segment, and there were a couple of announcements from Google last week that we thought worthy of sharing here on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
One is related to their new knowledge graph, and you'll have to check out the video and articles and things about this. But they're making search a lot smarter in search that thinks like a human, I guess, is mm-hmm. what their goal is. And graphing out search for you, a more visual representation of search. I think this is being rolled out slowly, so I'm not sure if everyone has this available to them yet, but you might want to read up on it and hear how Google's getting smarter with search. And in addition, they introduced something to Google Docs. So if you're writing a document using the Google Docs tool, there's now a research sidebar. Mm-hmm. So as you're typing along, you can type in research items there on the side and get images and quotes and citations and all kinds of things available integrated with your Google document that you're working on.
So. Right, which kind of just kind of puts it all together. And I think a lot of these tools are meant to work nicely with their Chromebook so that you have a unified experience and can do your research right there where you're actually writing the document. So it's a, I think it's a good tool for students who are doing research papers and need access to other content and can easily kind of scan things as they're going along. So kind of a cool tool that they put together. And why not? Because Google does have that information. They've indexed the entire web, so they're taking advantage of that in both of these new products that they've rolled out.
Excellent. Martin, I think you should lead off the picks of the week this
Since
week.
Since we're talking Google, I'd be happy to do that. Yeah, and then we can jump to you and we can stop talking about Google. But my pick is something that we've talked about recently at for News in Tech, one of our previous Google segments, and that's Google Drive. And I bring it up now as a pick because I've had enough time to play with it, get comfortable with it, and feel comfortable making it a pick. So there are all kinds of these services like Dropbox and SkyDrive. Microsoft was in the news recently with their relaunch of SkyDrive. And now Google has its own version of that called Google Drive. And so I tried it and I thought, well, I need a solution that I can feel comfortable that, you know, my stuff is going to be available and also sync to wherever I need it to sync, whether it be my phone, tablet, other computer, whatever. And so that was kind of the criteria that I had established for a product like this. And Google Drive met those expectations at a decent price. So for 5 gigabytes, you don't have to pay anything. You can upload up to 5 gigabytes of data without any issue, without any cost, and sync it to however many devices you want. And it'll take any kind of file. I went ahead and purchased a year's worth of service for $50, which gave me 100 gigabytes. So I have about 100 gigabytes worth of files. And this I mostly use for my personal stuff. So kind of a home account. So my stuff, Debbie's stuff, whatever stuff that we kind of have around on computers, I wanted to make sure we had a good backup for and available to us when we needed it. And Google Drive met that niche. In addition, you can install apps so that, again, they act kind of like a cloud-based operating system so that if you click on a document that there is an app for, like a mind map or an image file, it'll open up an associated app like Aviary or MindMeister, both of which we've talked about in the past. Another great feature of Google Drive is that you can selectively sync, which is one problem that I had with SkyDrive. Google Drive allows you to say, I only want to sync this folder, and this folder to this computer, and this folder and that folder to another computer. So that works really well, especially if you have some tight local storage limitations. So what I do is I sync everything up. I push everything up into the cloud, up to 100 gigabytes, and I think I'm about 60% full at this point. But I have a computer at home with a larger hard drive that I sync everything down to. So I don't totally trust Google with all my content. So I've got it in two locations. I have it in the cloud, and then I have it in local storage. So that system works really well. I don't have to do anything. It just happens, and it just works. There's file versioning. So if you upload a new file, the file changes. It'll save a version of it. And very good price. So $50 gets you 100 gigs. I think you can go up to $100, get 200 gigs, and so on and so forth. So just a simple way to do it. Works easily with Google Docs and Gmail, and I think they've done a nice job with this product. So my pick is Google Drive.
And you're quite inspiring with all your backup and everything. I think that I need to get cleaner in that regard.
You only need to be burned once to kind of learn that there could be a problem in your future.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, Sally, you're going to take us away from the Google space. Where are you going with your pick?
I'm going off to college with my pick.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe we can say this has a ministry application if you're in a secondary ed setting or a guidance counselor kind of setting. Or you have a child who's approaching their senior year. So those are my disclaimers for making this ministry related. Anyway, the website is collegeresults.org. And I found this to be a really valuable website because you can compare colleges. They've got an extensive database of information, everything from graduation rates to average test scores to fees to student characteristics like percentage male versus female and all kinds of things like that. Just a great database of information, and they've done it for several years. So there's a lot of history to go back to as well. You can go to individual college sites and get that kind of information. Mm-hmm. But what's unique about this site is you can put in a list of colleges, and it will show you all the information comparatively for the list of colleges that you select. Mm. And you can also download it in PDF or Excel format if you want to get the data, your hands on the data, exactly. So, I think it's a great site for just taking a step back and looking comparatively at the different colleges that a student might be considering. And if you're in charge of a school website, perhaps a link that would be worthy to go on the school website in the guidance area. So check out collegeresults.org.
And I assume that's all free.
Yeah, totally free.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Sally, we should probably do a little plug for our 7 Best series that's coming up in a couple weeks.
Right, we're going to be talking the 7 Best Bookmarking Tools and Tips. And if you're like me, you are overwhelmed by the amount of great stuff that's out on the web and continually finding new things that you don't want to lose. You want to be able to pull up, especially based on certain tags or whatever. And we'd like to look at how you organize all that great content, whether you use a service, you use your browser bookmarks, whether you save things offline in a certain format or whatever it may be. How do you keep up with all the great stuff that's coming your direction?
Yep.
So listeners, feel free to share. We need your input to build the best 7 best list.
Right. And please do that in the next week and a half, because we're going to be talking about this in the first Wednesday in June, episode 239, will be our 7 best. All right. Just a reminder about a couple things. One is we have some final web training coming up, and that's all online, so you don't even need to leave the comfort of your own home or office. We have a final web for teachers on July 9th or 16th, a one-day session just for teachers. And then we have our final web for dummies class, which is a 3-day, and you can pick one of the three or all three or any combination thereof, a beginner, intermediate, advanced, and that's running July 10th to 12th or 17th to 19th. We're doing it all through Google Hangouts, so we'll see how that goes. I'm excited to try it. And the cost is $48.99 per day. Or if you sign up for the 3-day, $128.99. We'll put links in the show notes. Please sign up soon. And we hope to see you. And pass the word if there's somebody in your church or school that might be able to take advantage of this. Let them know.
Excellent. And probably worth mentioning once again that this is graduation and call season. And this week, the seminary is the place of focus. On Tuesday night was the vicar assignments, but still to come are the graduate assignments, the graduation concert, and the actual graduation service at the seminary. So tune in for those via live streaming.
Yep. And you just go to wells.net to find all that good stuff. Let's move on to community feedback.
All right. A few links shared via Digo. Randy Nepson shared a link to an article comparing Google Drive versus Dropbox, SkyDrive, and SugarSync. And maybe a little bit timely with your pick this week, Martin. So check out that article if you'd like some comparison information.
Lots of choices, yep. And I've tried all of them. So and probably I've picked a couple of them as picks of the week. So
very good. Pastor Emil Burgess shared a link to a worship choir planning spreadsheet that he's created in Google Docs. And what's cool about it is he's done all the work of all of the Sundays throughout the coming church year, and you can just save a copy of it and make use of it in your congregation. So he even gives instructions on Digo of how to do that. But basically, you go to the file, make a copy command, and save it into your own Google Docs, and then you can make use of it and customize it to meet your needs. So thanks very much for sharing.
Very good.
And then finally, the third link to Hello Slide. I think this was a Ryan Rosenthal link, if I'm remembering correctly. And Hello Slide is a place where you can upload PowerPoint presentations and narrate them, but not with your own voice. You can actually type out a script, and the computer will generate narration to go along with your slideshow. So if you want the computer to read your narration, you can do that at Hello Slide. Check that out. Kids probably would enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We heard from, I don't know, does she wish to remain anonymous? One of our favorite listeners?
Yes, my wife. And actually, she didn't respond directly to the show since she doesn't listen. Or occasional. She's an infrequent listener. But that's okay. She does provide resources. She is the art teacher at our school. And I forwarded her a link thinking, hey, you can, you know, this is something that you might be interested in, called the Artist Toolkit from Arts Connected. .org. Yeah, artsconnected.org. Very cool thing. And she said, yeah, I've used it in class this year. It came in handy when we were doing our unit on perspective. Great examples of perspective from master artists. Thumbs up. And it is a cool site. It's kind of, it must be HTML5 or Flash-based.
It's loud.
You can
hear
it right in the background. Yes. See artists in action, so you can actually see how they put together art. Explore the tools that artists use, like line, color, and balance, to build works of art. So visual elements and principles, and a nice soundtrack to boot. So
yeah, is there a mute button possibly? No, kids will love that.
They do, and it's nicely done, and high praise from somebody I highly respect.
Excellent. So that's what we like to hear.
Yes.
All right, next up we heard from Jeff Clark, who was looking for an update on the reworking of the HymnSoft software. This is something that was demoed at the recent worship conference last summer, but hasn't been released yet from Northwestern Publishing House. So we did some checking with our contact there, Mark Buskey, and Mark says that the HymnSoft software is about to go into beta testing. So hopefully they're going to progress through that beta testing fairly quickly, and we'll have a new product.
That's exciting
before
stuff.
You know it.
Yep.
Very good. Thanks for asking, Jeff. Leslie Bergman sent you a message on Facebook, Martin. I don't know if you saw that, but she posted a link to an article.
Yes, I saw it.
It said specifically, News for Martin, and the title of the article was Pinterest Financing Values Company at $1.5 billion.
Yeah.
How could you not respect something worth $1.5 billion?
I was just reading the other day, it was probably yesterday even, that there are a number of e-commerce consortiums that are really happy with Pinterest because the buy rate from click-throughs from Pinterest are almost twice what they are on Twitter or other social networks. So when somebody comes to their site via a link on Pinterest, they are typically shoppers, which I guess reinforces my opinion that Pinterest is for ladies.
For shoppers.
For shoppers, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think, I'm just kind of reminded of our discussion way back in the Clay Shirky book. Remind me of the title of it.
Here Comes Everybody?
Yeah, and that whole shift to imagery as opposed to words.
Right.
And that's what Pinterest is all about. That's why you want to buy, because you see the beautiful imagery and get excited about it. So I think that's just a shift in our mentality to that image-based being so powerful to us.
Yep. Very good. Thanks, Leslie, for commenting. I appreciate the information.
Someday he's going to love this. I'm just sure of it.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we heard from Corey Putz, who says he's been listening to the podcast for nearly 2 years. Welcome, Corey. We appreciate your comments and are glad
you're listening. Makes him a long-time listener. All-time listener, but long-time.
Yep. And he says we have been a huge help to getting his church in the online ministry. So that's very encouraging to hear. Mm-hmm. And Corey specifically was asking about tips for blogging. He'd like to begin blogging to help start a conversation, to have content to share on their Facebook page, that kind of thing. And he suggested even that it would be nice to hear a podcast or a series of podcasts discussing how laymen can share the gospel through blogs. And, you know, maybe some tips on what not to do as well, so that people can let their voice be heard, but in an evangelical way.
Yeah. There's a couple considerations here, Corey, and I think people like yourself that are interested in blogging and sharing their faith through their blogs have lots of opportunities to do that. And that's more, I guess I would call that more personal evangelism, where you have the opportunity to talk about something, whatever it is that you'd like, and represent your Savior in that way and how what the Bible says about particular topics of interest. It becomes a little different when you're talking about blogging on behalf of the church, and that's where you want to coordinate with the pastor and staff and make sure that there's a communication strategy and plan in place, not just for blogs, but for even social network participation, because the church needs to maybe speak a little bit differently than an individual, and you want to make sure that that's a planned approach and it makes sense to everybody and everybody can get behind it. But I think topics, relevant topics, current topics are all things that should be on the agenda of either one. And as you're working through what to write about and as you're thinking through what to write about, I think that's an important step to take as you're maybe putting together a content list of relevant topics and obviously speak what God has on your heart.
Very good. All right. Next up.
And I think, just to follow up on that, Sally, I think it is a worthwhile topic, you know, for us to consider because we do get that question once in a while. What I'd like to do a blog. What do I write about? And I think you and I asked the same question, right?
Definitely. I'm trying to get back into blogging, so I need to get motivated myself.
Yeah, you just had a blog released yesterday, right?
Yeah, that was a family thing. We're going to try and blog every day this summer.
Really?
As a family, with different unique things that the boys create or videos we're watching or whatever. We're going to try to share something every day, so we'll see.
You're kind of given assignments.
Yeah,
each
we
day.
Have.
So each guy, each person has a day.
That's right. And some days, today is our haiku day. We're going to all try to write a haiku. And,
really? That's
and
cool.
Share. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I think it's there's so much great stuff for the kids to discover, and it'd be a neat exercise for them to share it. They're really into gaming right now, so some of them can create video games that we can embed on the blog and all kinds of stuff. So
cool.
Should be fun.
Awesome.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Martin, you had an announcement about a programming position.
Yeah, we have a large project going on, large initiative within the Synod Administration Building to upgrade our database software. And so this really basically runs everything from call lists to our pension plan to our yearbook and statistical reports. All those things run through this particular database. And it's about a 25-year-old piece of technology that we're replacing, and we need help. We have a grant given to us to assist with that. So we're looking for a contract programmer who is kind of a .NET SQL Server kind of guy or gal. And we will post this information in the show notes as far as where you can find out more information about that. It's either a 6 or 12-month gig, and could be full-time, but we're looking for help just to get this project a little bit more quickly out the door. So if you have those skills and are available, let us know. Or if you know of anybody, please pass along the information.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that. And then finally, we have a comment from Maren McPeak, our friend out in California, mm-hmm. who works for a school district and also is associated with the St. Mark's congregation. And I'm drawing a blank.
Citrus Heights.
There you go, in Citrus Heights. I knew you'd remember. Mm-hmm. You know that California geography well, don't you?
My brother was married in that church.
Oh, how about that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Maren was looking more into Schoology. We talked about Schoology a little bit on a recent mm-hmm. episode. It's a learning management system, but it's patterned after Facebook, so it has
social.
A real social feel to mm-hmm. it. Yeah, and they actually use it in her public middle school where she works, and it has been well adopted there. They're really happy with it, and she says they're using it a little bit at St. Mark's as well, a little slower adoption there. But she was interested in finding out about their enterprise features, and she says mainly SSO via Google Apps. Now, I'm not familiar with SSO via Google Apps, but what she found was it's fairly costly. The entire premium package is $6,500 annually, and just to turn on the SSO is $2,000 annually. So looks like it's geared toward schools with 1,000 or more students.
SSO is single sign-on, I believe.
Oh, okay. So just kind of integrating mm-hmm. with your Google account, basically.
Exactly.
And so anyway, sounds like an excellent solution for large schools, but probably too pricey. She did suggest that maybe a group purchase with some kind of co-op of Wells schools might be one way to go. So mm-hmm. I guess good knowledge to have, and certainly you can contact Schoology directly if you're interested in that kind of thing, but at least we have an idea of what the pricing is.
Sure. And I'm sure there are some that use the free, the free version as well. So it is a cool tool.
Excellent. So. Yep.
Is that it for our community feedback segment?
That will do it for this week, yes, sir.
Then I'm excited about next week, Sally. I always look forward to our classroom technology focus, and we'll be having Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska, join us once again. And we're going to be talking about what are we talking about? Summer plans.
Yep. Gear up for some professional development over the summer, and mm-hmm. just what conferences or online activities the three of us might be participating in, and how you can find some great opportunities in your area as well.
Yep. Very good. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music from Dawn Michelle Williams, Maya's song from her self-titled album, Dawn Michelle Williams. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please join us again next week.